This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
The Charlie Kirk shooting suspect's $1 million defense, and we're paying for it. This as the defendant claims no one was in danger? Really? His family insisting he's never set foot on the campus anyway, and that it's not him caught on video. Okay, who should I believe, you or my lying eyes? Does it all boil down to this? Confessions, DNA, and Grandpa's rifle. The evidence stacking up. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
It's about 2 minutes in when the shot was fired.
All witnesses are reporting that all they heard was a single shot that was fired.
Eddie reached up to his neck and blood was starting to gush out of his neck.
And it hit him in the carotid artery, and that caused a bleed out almost immediately.
The Charlie Kirk shooting suspect. Court appearance yesterday. He did not show his face. This, as we hear, his roommate, his romantic partner, apparently laying low even in a safe house. You know, Charlie Kirk didn't have that opportunity, did he? This as the suspect's family also laying low. But tonight we are learning some family members insisting, what? He's never set foot on the campus before. Okay, I guess all the cameras are lying. So what does that mean? It's not him we see on the video? So much happening. Straight out to Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter. How are certain family members claiming that he, the suspect, never has been on that campus? How is that happening? Am I supposed to ignore what he said in the text to his romantic partner roommate?
According to Candace Owens, you are supposed to ignore those texts because they were authored by FBI agents and not Tyler Robinson to Lance.
I'm sorry. My earpiece must not be working correctly because I thought for sure, Sydney Sumner, I heard you say that there is a theory that all the texts that the alleged shooter sent his romantic partner roommate were actually written by the FBI. Did you say that?
I didn't. Candace Owens did on her stream yesterday afternoon. So she took the step further. We've already heard rumors that Gen Zers are saying, you know, I've never heard a 22-year-old talk like that over text message. This is really weird. And she came out and made that accusation yesterday that these text messages are part of an FBI cover-up, and an FBI agent without a modicum of intelligence wrote those text messages.
Okay, so the FBI agent was in on the whole thing, that it was the grandpa's long gun and the alleged shooter couldn't retrieve it and was caught on cam at a Dairy Queen waiting to go back into the trees and bushes to get his gun. So the FBI agent that this conservative influencer is talking about, what, is a clairvoyant? He was in on the whole thing, or what? Did he plant the gun too? This from Candace Owens. Sydney, help me out. What is she claiming?
Well, Nancy, so they're claiming, Owens is claiming, that these text messages include every single detail that police had tracking Tyler Robinson up until the point that he was arrested. So we're hearing reports now from law enforcement sources that Robinson actually had a run-in with police near UVU campus the evening after the shooting, and they believe he was trying to make a move to retrieve that rifle. Now, law enforcement already had the rifle in their possession. They already knew what model it was. They already knew that it had a big $2,000 scope on it. So Owens is pointing out that these text messages include every single detail of the planning of the shooting, of the rifle that was used in the shooting, and that feels a little bit suspicious. She finds that odd that this 34
ACT score. Okay, stop right there.
Do that.
So now here we go. the floodgates are open. I haven't even gotten to the hearing that went down yesterday and what, if anything, it means to the defense and the state. We are bombarded by these insane theories that the FBI secretly wrote all the texts from Robinson, the alleged shooter, to his roommate, his romantic partner, Lance Twiggs. Okay, Sky Lazzaro joining me, state and federal criminal defense attorney with Ray Quinney and Niebecker. Sky, just take off your defense hat one moment, if that's possible.
I can do it.
This is fodder for the defense. It's complete fodder. Now, any defense attorney in their right mind would likely not claim that the texts were sent by the FBI because there's just too much knowledge in those texts that nobody else would know all those details other than the sender. But that said, this is muddying the water for the state. All these conspiracy theories have gone wild, and basically the defense can sit back and pick and choose which crazy, zany conspiracy theory they're going to present to the jury. They don't even have to come up with a trial strategy. The online sleuths are doing it for them.
I couldn't agree more. In this case, this is the best thing that can happen, because if you got a jury pool is fighting with each other about conspiracy theories or this happened or this didn't happen, I mean, that's the best thing that can happen to you in a case.
I want to actually see her face. Sky Lazzaro has won a lot of cases, but I want to see her face. Did you just say, with apparently a straight face, that the defense could blame the government for Charlie Kirk's assassination?
No.
This rogue FBI agent really did it.
No defense attorney is going to do that. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in this case. What my point was is, when you have a jury pool who's out there, who's getting all of this information and hearing this from different platforms, and I think, Candace Owens said millions of viewers yesterday, people believe that stuff. And if you have a jury pool that is divided on whether or not the government had a hand in this or covered it up or something else, I mean, that's grounds for jury nullification somewhere along the way.
Chris McDonough, help me. Look, I know that some of these wild claims, which we're about to hear, are zany. But when I'm sitting in the prosecutor's chair, and I've got Charlie Kirk's widow sitting behind me, waiting for me to somehow wave a magic wand and make it all turn out right, and you are confronted with theories like which are being thrown out right now, polluting the jury pool, it's overwhelming. Yes, I'm angry. I am angry. All the make-believe and pretend theories that are out there as to who assassinated Charlie Kirk in cold blood, now a rogue FBI agent did it? You can't laugh it off, Chris, as tempting as it is. McDonough is a former homicide investigator. He worked Vice. He's worked every angle for the state. He's now the star of The Interview Room on YouTube, director of the Cold Case Foundation. Chris, this is not a joke. This is real. You get one nut jar. Look at O.J. Simpson. Really? People really believe the police could hold it together and create a conspiracy? That's total BS. Same thing here.
Yeah, absolutely, Nancy. I mean, and you know more than anybody being in that courtroom to hear craziness like this. I mean, this is just irresponsible right now. I mean, the fact that you have this allegation that, some other dude, i.e. law enforcement, the government, whoever, had set this kid up and it's, some gigantic conspiracy.
Set him up? What kid are you talking about?
Well,
what kid are we talking about? Is there somehow a middle school shooter? I mean, I don't know. What kid are you talking about?
Well, we're talking about Tyler Robinson, right? I mean, and by the way, I interviewed the undersheriff.
He is no kid.
Well, I agree with you, but, he's also not the smartest tool in the shed, even though he has an IQ that's extremely high. The fact that he's left all the evidence behind him and in front of him, by the way, this, I think this is part of a play somewhere from somebody. The fact that
the conspiracy theories are going to make a lot of hay out of what you said just then about leaving evidence out. They're going to claim it was planted. And I don't want to hear another word about he's too dumb to pull it off. This guy won a nearly $40,000 scholarship. Control room, please pull that video up. And do I have to convince McDonough again for Pete? Listen.
To receive the resident presidential scholarship from Utah State University. The value of this scholarship is approximately $32,000. This scholarship is available for 4 years or 8 semesters.
Yeah, well, the state saved a lot of money on that one.
Yeah, all that opportunity, all that advantage. And what did he do? What were you saying about the undersheriff?
Well, I interviewed the undersheriff, and he confirmed that everything that is being said online is not true. First of all, Tyler Robinson's father was not in law enforcement. It was his friend, and that's still being projected out there. Second, he did turn himself into the jail with a friend of his who was retired law enforcement. And that's not a conspiracy. That's facts.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Chris McDonough, you know what? You're branching out into even more conspiracy theories, and normally I would chastise you for getting off the point, but you're right. Another conspiracy theory. And let's take a look at the source of some of the conspiracy theories.
Any person with a modicum of intelligence is going to go, I'm not going to put this down in writing with every detail. And apparently whoever offered those messages, likely feds, didn't have a modicum of intelligence. The family says that the photo of the young man that is coming up the stairs, which was shared, that blurry image, is definitively not Tyler Robinson. And when I put together what I'm being told by Lance's family and what I'm hearing from the Robinson family through a third party, I will say that it matches. It kind of seems like they're agreeing. One family's going, hey, Lance is kind of evil. Why is he getting cleared? And the other one's going, Tyler's not this guy.
Okay, I really don't know where to start with that big, steaming, stinky crock of BS I just heard. That is from Candace Owens. Let's just break it down very quickly, and then maybe we can actually get to the facts, the real facts, the hard evidence about what is happening now. First of all, any person with a modicum of intelligence is going to go, I'm not going to put this all down in writing, every detail. And whoever authored those messages, like the feds, don't have a modicum of intelligence. Okay, I was a Fed for 3 years before I became a felony prosecutor in Superior Court. So as a former Fed, I don't appreciate that very much. But that said, I'm very, very curious. Straight back out to Sky Lazaro joining us, veteran trial lawyer in both the state and federal criminal systems. That is a really long stretch to claim, hey, the defendant would never put so many details in his text. BS, yes, they would, because they're not that smart, Sky. Why do you think the federal and the state jails are so full? Because they're idiots.
I wish none of my clients ever wrote anything down, but that is not the reality.
No, it's not. And also, let's talk about this. To Tracy Brown joining us, you guys know Tracy very well, body language expert and author of How to Detect Lies, Fraud, and Identity Theft. She's bodylanguagetrainer.com. Tracy, please, when you think that you are texting with your romantic partner, you say a lot more than you would say to other people, right?
I think you do, because there's a very deep trust there, I would say. One of the things that concerned me when I saw this was the perfect punctuation and capitalization, and it didn't seem age appropriate to me. So either he's so smart that he's not tuned into his generation, or something else has taken over. It's very odd.
Put her up. Just so you know, Tracy, both of my twins text nonstop to me, and their punctuation is always perfect.
They're 17. Do they really? Oh, so, wow. Okay.
Yes,
right.
Really. Yeah, so reality check. Another thing too, Allison Paganelli joining us, forensic psychologist, esteemed forensic psychologist, joining us out of the Atlanta jurisdiction. Allison Paganelli, thank you for being with us. Allison, when you are writing someone that you trust and that you love, that you're romantic with, very often you lower your guard and you say things you wouldn't normally say to anybody else. Isn't that true?
Yes.
I like that. Short and sweet. Yes. Another thing regarding this conspiracy theory that the FBI really wrote the text and not the defendant, the FBI would have to be clairvoyant in some way to know all the details about Grandpa's long gun and how he was trying to go back and retrieve it, and so much more contained in those texts from Tyler Robinson to his roommate.
Yes. They would be overly involved. If this were the conspiracy that Candace Owens says it is, then that would mean that the FBI was, tracking Mr. Robinson, knew of weapons that he had.
Allison, hold on just a moment. Tracking Mr. Robinson, more like setting him up. Because if the FBI is responsible, then they would have been responsible for the shooting and for setting it up and for framing him. I mean, this goes a lot deeper than faking a few texts. So you would have to believe that the FBI was in on this from the get-go. Do you really believe that? Because I find it to be a fantastical farce.
Do I believe that that's what happened? No, I don't. To me, it would be far-fetched for the FBI to pick Tyler Robinson out of many, many males and females who are online talking about various political things. He's a 22-year-old, allegedly really intelligent. He got the scholarship. It would seem to me, yeah, like I said, pretty far-fetched for them to just pick him out and decide we're going to frame this guy and we're going to send all these texts with all the details. It's just, it would have had to have been pre-planned for a long period of time. And I just don't think that's a plausible theory.
It's not plausible. Hermania Rodriguez now joining us, chief U.S. reporter with DailyMail.com. Hermania, thank you for being with us. So, you know, now that we're hashing out, and this is just one conspiracy theory that the FBI really wrote the text. I haven't even gotten to what happened in court. Hermania, where is this coming from? This theory. And another thing I heard Owens claim is that the families are saying the defendant is innocent. Of course they are. They always say that. How often do you see the mother of, and by the way, this is the family that convinced him to turn himself in. All right. Now claiming, yeah, that's not him in the picture. This just, where's this coming from?
This case has been completely riddled by conspiracy theories that have really emerged on social media, particularly on X. A lot, you talked about people saying that the text messages do not sound how a Gen Zer would speak. We saw a lot of memes being done about this.
Hermania, have you noticed that everybody talking about how a Gen Zer would speak is not a Gen Zer? Okay, so consider the source on that. Go ahead, please.
Correct. This was all speculation based on nothing specific. But then we start seeing the same conspiracies emerge from Candace Owens' show. Now, it's important to remember that Candace Owens is not a typical journalist. She claims that she's been speaking to the family of Tyler Robinson, who allegedly claims that that's not their son involved. However, we don't really have evidence about this. She's not saying which people she's speaking to. She actually mentioned in the clip that you showed that she's talking to them through a third person. So a lot of what Candace Owens is saying on her show seems to lead to other of the conspiracy theories that she has been peddling about Charlie Kirk and who would have wanted to have him gone, according to her.
You know, another issue to Sky Lazaro joining us, veteran trial lawyer out of the Utah jurisdiction. Sky, so much of it is fantastical. But when you see the 12 in the box, you don't know what they're really thinking. I mean, I would try to get as up close and personal to each juror as I could without getting reprimanded by the judge. And I mean physically close to them, right up to the jury rail, if I could, to look them in the eye and watch them the way I'm watching you right now as they answered each question. And the questions, you know, after the typical, where do you work? How long have you been there? Do you have a family? Do you know the defendant? Do you know anybody in his family? Blah, blah, blah. I would look right at them and hold their gaze to see if they looked away, if they blinked rapidly, if they had mannerisms that suggested they had to think about their answers. Were they concealing something? You never know, Sky, what they're really thinking. And we've seen so many jurors recently that have gone online and investigated the case themselves, which is prohibited during a trial. You've got to be really careful that one of these jurors haven't gotten sucked down the conspiracy drain.
That's 100% correct. I think our biggest fear is trial lawyers are the people who really want to be there. You almost want jurors who don't want to be there because they're probably less involved in the case. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter how much you do in voir dire, how close you get to them. You never know really what those people are thinking deep down or if they have any affiliations or have gone down these conspiracy theory rat holes and just want to be a part of this case. And the other thing is, unless you sequester them, it's almost impossible to keep them offline during a trial.
And of course, this is a defense team's fantasy. It's the juror fantasy game that they're playing right now, largely fueled by sleuths. Tonight, we are dealing with the facts as we know them now. Not he said, she said, the third cousin twice removed told the gas station attendant this, and then they called me, blah, blah, blah. But here are just a few of the conspiracy theories that are spinning out right now, and trust me, believe you me, the defense is writing everyone down. Listen.
Any person with a modicum of intelligence is going to go, I'm not going to put this down in writing with every detail. And apparently whoever offered those messages, likely feds, didn't have a modicum of intelligence. The family says that the photo of the young man that is coming up the stairs, which was shared, that blurry image, is definitively not Tyler Robinson. And when I put together what I'm being told by Lance's family and what I'm hearing from the Robinson family through a third party, I will say that it matches. It kind of seems like they're agreeing. One family's going, hey, Lance is kind of evil. Why is he getting cleared? And the other one's going, Tyler's not this guy.
From Candace Owens.
This is a father of two. Had a little girl, a little boy, wife Erica.
Like him or hate him, he's a media figure. He was magnetic.
Charlie Kirk is one of these people that is a firebrand. They know he is one of these guys who has, he stood up for what he believes in.
Candace Owens claims a source close to the Robinson family believe Robinson is being framed. Has never been to UVU campus. Robinson's parents know the blurry photos distributed by law enforcement are not their son. Robinson never confessed to his father, and he did not write the messages to Lance Twiggs on September 10th.
Why are you playing that? I just said we're going to be dealing with facts tonight, not zany conspiracy theories that are handing over wild ideas for the defense to pursue in front of a jury. No, let's go to the courtroom. Listen to what the judge just said.
As this case moves forward, Mr. Robinson's constitutional rights will be protected at every stage. He sits before this court presumed innocent, and that presumption remains unless and until each element of every offense charged against him is proved beyond a reasonable doubt. At the same time, and as applicable, victims are entitled under our Constitution to be treated with fairness, respect, and dignity, free from harassment or abuse. Justice demands that both of these principles, the rights of the accused and the rights of victims, be honored without compromise.
Cindy Sunray, we're hearing the judge right there, Judge Tory Graff, speaking, talking about being fair not just to the defendant, but to the victims, the state as well. Why did everybody go berserk when the judge said he was going to be fair? I don't get it. What's wrong with that?
I found nothing wrong with it. I think the judge made the decision to speak on this issue and speak on keeping things fair because this is such a charged case. Going forward, they really want to protect the defendant, the victim, the future jury. At this latest hearing, attendees who came in person were not allowed to have bags. They were not allowed to wear any kind of face covering that could possibly conceal their identity. There are serious security concerns with this upcoming trial, with all of the hearings up until the trial, and they want to make sure everyone feels safe and secure in that courtroom.
You know, to Germania Rodriguez joining us, chief U.S. reporter with Daily Mail, I respect the judge because the judge is standing up to people, the baying mob, that is demanding one thing, or all the conspiracy theorists who are demanding another thing. And he is saying he's going to be fair and they can all go straight to H-E-double-L. Of course, I'm paraphrasing right there, that he is going to do the right thing. Tell me, Cindy was just talking about the security measures taken for this is just the hearing and the defendant didn't even show his face. Profound security measures taken. Explain, Germania.
That's right. This was a hearing that was open to the public. So officials had to take extra steps to protect those that were there and also make sure that the influx of people into the courtroom, that everyone was safe. And that is why the judge made these statements. This case has caused so much commotion around the world and the country, and people wanted to show up to this hearing, even though, as you mentioned, we didn't even see Tyler Robinson on the video. So the judge made sure to say under these circumstances where we have all this extra security, where the president of the United States is talking about, I will not put my finger on the scale of justice. And it was a message, I think, that needed to be said in this case.
You know, the fact that he kept the hearing open to the public, as is ordered by the U.S. Constitution, in the face of what many consider to be a copycat shooting, to me, shows great bravery on the part of the judge. Listen to this.
A 29-year-old Texas man opens fire on an ICE facility in Dallas. Joshua John fired indiscriminately at the building, killing one detainee and injuring two more. Bullet casings recovered at the scene were inscribed with, quote, anti-ICE. John's brother said he did not know John to be very politically motivated. The brothers grew up in nearby Allen, Texas, as Boy Scouts. One of John's Boy Scout friends remembered a conversation about immigration with John, in which he was upset that no one seemed to understand how desperate families are to get away from dangerous situations.
And there you hear a guy who is seemingly not concerned with politics before being led to a blind shooting. And this is not whether you agree with ICE or don't agree with ICE. This is a shooter, politically motivated, killing people. The fact that the judge had an open courtroom is very impressive. And standing up to both sides, both very powerful sides, wanting one outcome or the next. Now, you just heard Germania Rodriguez mention the judge referring to the scales of justice. Listen.
I will carry out my duties with fidelity, transparency, and impartiality, treating every person who appears before me with the dignity and respect they are inherently due because they are human beings. Let me be clear. I will not put my finger on the scale of justice. These proceedings will be open to the public, conducted in accordance with the law, and handled with diligence and competence to ensure that justice is never compromised.
What he means by that is, as you all know, Lady Justice carries a shield and a sword. She also holds the scales of justice in her hands. And when the judge says, I'm not putting my finger on the scale, which would tip the scales of justice, basically calling for one outcome, guilty or the other, not guilty, by tipping the scales of justice. Is it true, Hermione Rodriguez, that the defense has already been giving carte blanche $1 million defense? They've already been given $1 million out of my wallet?
That's correct. This case is going to be really expensive for the state. And because it's a death penalty case, the state can attribute lots and lots of money for the defendant to get the best defense possible. And it doesn't have to be a public defender from the county. It can be a prominent, fancy lawyer like the one they have obtained. Her name is Catherine Nestor. And yes, reports are saying that this case, I believe it's both, and the defense will cost the state of Utah as much as $1 million.
As Utah County prepares for a high-profile trial, they are awarded $1 million of taxpayer money to fund Robinson's defense. The county hires three attorneys on Robinson's behalf, the team led by Catherine Nestor of Nestor Lewis in Salt Lake City. Nestor earned her law degree at the University of Texas and has more than 33 years of defense experience working in both Salt Lake and San Diego as a public defender.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
I heard the gunshot go off, and that was when I started hearing a bunch of people started crying and screaming to get down. I was terrified.
The man who allegedly shot Charlie Kirk, 22-year-old Utah resident Tyler Robinson.
I'm getting bombarded right now with conspiracy theories. Okay, so I say stop the conspiracy theories, and now they're pouring in like mad. I want to take a look at the shooting suspect, the Charlie Kirk shooting suspect, Robinson, on body cam. Let's see what we can learn. Watch this.
You guys have a couple different versions about what happened. So we have a third. We had a third-party witness that watched the entire thing. I'm just trying to clarify your guys' story a little bit. So you're heading
and from that rightmost through lane through the intersection.
Okay.
And maybe a second or so before I reached the intersection, the light changed yellow.
Okay, you remember looking at the light?
Yeah, I was looking up at the light just before getting there.
The main thing I see right there is it looks just like he did in the video after the shooting and before the shooting where he's wearing the sunglasses and the hat. Here's some more body cam. Let's watch.
So people on the side of you were slowing down to a stop.
Seen someone slowing down and I wondered why they had slowed so much.
Okay.
But
why did you think that they were slowing down?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Maybe because the light was turning red?
Well, I was close enough to the light that I would end up in the intersection if I had tried to brake from that speed.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go straight out to Tracy Brown, joining us, body language expert and author of How to Detect Lies. Tracy, I'm just looking at his body language and his demeanor with the LA law enforcement. What do you make of it, if anything?
I watched the whole video, the whole hour-long footage, and here's what's different between him and everyone else there. Because you got to ask yourself, what do you see and what's missing? And what's missing is two things. One, nervousness. So he may not have a response to trauma, and that can indicate like that. That can lead someone to think that, you know, what he allegedly did was okay. Everyone else, his brother, his mom, the guy in the car that he hit, showed signs of anxiety, fidgeting, wiping or touching your face, touching your neck, playing with your hair. He doesn't show anything. He keeps his hands in his pockets. Actually, he puts his thumbs in his pockets, which is framing his manhood there. And it's different than everyone else.
Put her up, please. Tracy Brown, what do you mean by putting his thumbs in his pockets is, quote, framing his manhood? I feel like I'm reading a 1969 romance novel. Framing his manhood. Who said that?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to be kind. I'm trying to be kind. It's the same moves that I've seen when I've done reads on Justin Bieber. It's showing how powerful he is. And it's aloof.
You mean by pointing to his crotch, to put it mildly?
That's what I mean.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Like those guys that are always grabbing themselves. I didn't know that meant anything.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a power play is what it is. And so he's different.
I just thought it was awkward.
So let's put him in the situation. Standing on the corner when your car's sitting in front of you wrecked and the police have showed up and you don't know how you're getting a ride home is awkward. So we got to give him that. He doesn't show the same level of effect that everyone else involved does. And he also shows a bit of a lack of awareness of the situation and what really happened. That last part is a little more understandable, but this shows, I think it indicates how he is with law enforcement and concern for those around him and affect at a very, very intense situation.
You know, it's really interesting that you interpret his behavior in that manner, because believe it or not, Tracy, that is what other experts are saying regarding his behavior right after the shooting. You're in lockstep, you're dovetailing with what other experts have said about his demeanor right after the shooting. Listen.
Experts say Robinson's behavior after the shooting indicates he did not have a solid plan to avoid capture. Former FBI agent Michael Tabman believes Robinson likely struggled with the gravity of his actions, leading to disorientation and confusion after the shooting. Tabman says Robinson had likely come to terms with being caught and did not plan for what happened after taking the shot. Robinson waited in Orem for hours trying to recover his grandfather's Mauser and reportedly had a run-in with police on UVU campus that evening as he made a move to get to the gun.
Okay, I'm not really buying into everything our investigative reporter just said, such as he had confusion because he left the scene, he changed clothes, he lay in wait trying to get his grandpa's long gun back. That doesn't sound confused at all to me, because he knew that that gun would be traced right back to his grandpa and had been gifted to him. In fact, isn't it true, Hermione Rodriguez, Daily Mail, that his bio dad, his father, Robinson's father, kept saying, send me a picture of your grandpa's gun, send me a picture. And he couldn't because it was confiscated by police. So he knew that gun would connect directly to him. That's not confused. That's kind of smart.
That's right. And that's a very important part of his conversations with his romantic partner and roommate, where he seems the most thinking about the rifle and trying to get it back. So he does mention that he's unsure whether the rifle will have a serial number and be traced back to him because it's an old weapon. It is his grandfather's. 1,000% in those messages that we have seen with his romantic interest, Tyler Robinson was hyper-focused in getting that rifle, and he knew it was the major thing tying him to the crime, and that's why he remained in the area trying to retrieve it.
Well, I guess, you know, it's the sneaky FBI, according to Candace Owens again. They knew not only that the murder weapon belonged to Tyler Robinson, had been gifted to him by his grandpa, but also in those texts, this, you know, completely belies any claim that he was confused. He says to the roommate in text, hey, drop what you're doing. His words, not mine. Go under my keyboard to my computer and get rid of this piece of paper that says, hey, I'm going to have a chance to shoot Charlie Kirk, and I'm going to take it. So I guess the FBI either planted that under his computer and then texted about it. My point, which is total, complete BS, but my point is here that he is by far from confused. Would you agree, Hermione Rodriguez?
Yeah, that's another way that we know he planned this attack, because after he did it, we know that he had left something in the apartment for the roommate to find.
Right
after the shooting, they contact the roommate and say, hey, check under the keyboard. So there's more premeditation and planning,
right?
Obvious.
And speaking of the long gun, Tracy Brown, and you're saying he didn't seem to understand the gravity, or he couldn't take in the gravity of the car crash, and he was acting really cavalier and casual guy in front of the police that responded to the crash. But here, after the shooting, we actually see him, and this is thanks to Candace Owens. She came up with this DQ Dairy Queen photo of him hanging around in the area. You know he wanted to leave the area, but he wanted to go and retrieve the long gun. It's like he doesn't understand. He was more worried, you know, that his dad was going to get mad about the long gun. That's what he was upset about. He didn't seem to understand the gravity that he just murdered someone, according to police. It's shot from Candace Owens. What about it, Tracy?
Well, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. So I am not surprised that he was aloof about the situation that he had just created, like in killing someone. It's the same way that he handled the car wreck. So 100% not surprised. And this is how he does things.
Yeah. But Tracy Brown, I hear what you're saying, and I want to follow up on that with our shrink, forensic psychologist Allison Paganelli, joining us from the Atlanta jurisdiction. Disconnected to what you've done. I see that all the time in killers, because people aren't real to them. They're objects. They don't feel human empathy toward their victim or the victim's family. So being disconnected does not rise to legal insanity that you don't know right from wrong at the time of the incident, does it?
It does not. In fact, any sort of mental condition that is just based on a pattern of criminal behavior or antisocial traits, lack of empathy, would not qualify for even the first step of an insanity defense.
Just released, dispatch audio has only poured fuel on the flame. Listen.
Here we go again.
Can you just add a sum to the case documenting that there was no autopsy?
I need an officer at Tampa Nuggets Hospital to come stage in the emergency room bay.
This from at Hustle Bitch on X. Straight out to Sydney Sumner, joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Apparently, the original death certificate was signed by a doctor at the hospital. Remember, Kirk was taken straight to the hospital. And so that is where the death certificate came from. The death certificate, isn't that right so far, Sydney Sumner?
Yes, absolutely.
Straight out to special guest joining us now, Dr. Priya Banerjee, board-certified forensic pathologist, anatomic pathologist with Anchor Forensic Pathology Consulting. Dr. Priya, thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Priya, while the death certificate may have been issued at the hospital, that does not preclude Kirk's body being sent for autopsy, does it?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. First of all, I would say that anytime there's trauma involved, a regular doctor, even an ER doc, can't sign the death certificate. So that death certificate is null and void. They're not legally allowed to do that. So what will happen is that he'll go for an autopsy, even if the cause of death is somewhat obvious. But we really need to document what was injured, you know, do it systematically, and then issue a death certificate.
Hermione Rodriguez joining us, Chief U.S. Reporter, DailyMail.com. As of tonight, has the autopsy report, the official COD, cause of death, been released?
No, we have not seen an autopsy report, and that has, as you said, fueled further speculation.
Back to Dr. Priya Banerjee joining us, a forensic pathologist. Dr. Priya, a slowdown in the release of an autopsy report could be due to any number of things. You got to wait on toxicology with all of the conspiracy theories floating around out there. I think many of them will be put to rest once we get the official autopsy report. What do you think is the holdup? Why no report yet?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in that, you know, even if the autopsy is completed, the exam, the report is very detailed. There's other studies that need to be done, like toxicology. That does not happen overnight. And obviously, in any case, but a high profile case, we want to dot our I's, cross our T's. So I don't know if there's any special analysis being done, but there's also like different rules state to state. I mean, that, you know, there could be legal issues where you would, you know, be able to chime in more right. than I as to why the report may not even be released, especially with an ongoing investigation.
Yeah, it could be any number of reasons, but now the conspiracy theorists are claiming the government will use their own doctors to effect a cover-up. The theories even go as far as attacking Charlie Kirk's widow. The mother of his children is not immune from conspiracy theorists. As you will recall, at his memorial, Erica Kirk raised up an I love you sign. Now that is being twisted around to claim that she is actually putting up the devil's horns. The video you're seeing right there is from Turning Point, but anyone familiar with sign language knows, hi, I love you. That's what she's doing. I love you, abbreviated. They won't even leave his widow alone. We are also learning that, speaking of Erica Kirk, to Sidney Sumner, are there also theories that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the hit and that Erica is actually an Israeli spy named Honeypot?
Yes. Unfortunately, that is a rumor that is going around that just gets a reaction from me personally. So the rumor is that Charlie Kirk, who has been vocal in his support of Israel, was kind of coming to a point that he was no longer going to be offering them his support in this conflict. So,
okay, you know what? I'm just going to stop you right there. I don't want to add fuel to the flame. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.